This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
Some point in my childhood, my father gave us all code names. He was Boris C.C., my mother was Muller Stay, I was Kindo.
That's Mark Vonnegut, son of Kurt Vonnegut, reading from his new memoir, Just Like Someone with Mental Illness, Only More So. Even though Kurt Vonnegut became a celebrity novelist, Mark says he didn't actually grow up with a well-known father.
I was 21 when Slaughterhouse-Five was published. I mostly didn't live at home anymore, so it was like watching from afar when the money hit. My sisters grew up as the children of a famous writer. I did not.
In Mark Vonnegut's book, he writes about his ongoing struggle with schizophrenia and his life now as a practicing pediatrician in Quincy. He also describes his early 20s, back in 1971, when he was searching for himself and joined a commune.
I honestly believed, and I think a lot of people believed, although they'll deny it now, that Western civilization was coming to an end, and to be honest, you could not be part of corporate America or whatever.
And it was while you were with that commune that you had your first psychotic break, as you call it.
Correct.
Do you think the experience of having been part of a commune played a role in having that breakdown?
I don't know if it really allowed me to stay out there on the loose a little bit longer. Because I was having all these horrible panic attacks. I did have a job in Boston. I worked at Boston State Hospital, and life was becoming less and less bearable in terms of traffic. All sorts of things were just bothering me a lot more. At the time, I thought that was some form of virtue. I now see it as part of a mental illness where it takes less and less to rattle your cage. So in a certain extent, I felt a great deal of purpose and was able to devote a lot of energy into, you know, chopping wood, building a house, doing all that. And I think that may have kept me on the loose a few months longer, or maybe even a year longer, had I tried to survive in Boston.
And when you had that breakdown, your father's fame came back to haunt you again in a way, because as you say, people expect the children of famous people to crack up.
Right. No, that has been a revelation to me, that there is an edge of not wishing them to do well, or certainly understanding when they do badly. Like when, you know, some famous actor's son is, you know, gets convicted of a crime or kills themselves or is involved in drugs. Everybody sort of has this, of course, attitude.
Mark, you've just written a new book, but you actually have written an earlier book about 30 years ago. This was Eden Express. You wrote that book in response to your first psychotic break, which happened in 1971 when you were on the commune. Your father, Kurt Vonnegut, wrote in his own memoir called Palm Sunday that Eden Express was, as he put it, your wish to, quote, tell people who are going insane something about the shape of the roller coaster they are on. How would you describe the shape of the roller coaster of your breakdowns? Because you've had four over your lifetime. Are they different every time?
They're different and they're the same. And it's also the same, as far as I know, for my grandmother, for other people in my family. And there is this disconnect of being unable to sleep, of not being able to eat, of being very, very high, of feeling that you suddenly understand the meaning of life and what everything is about. And whether you become Jesus or Buddha or whatever, there's a very hyper-religiosity, and then the voices start chatting to you. And so there's a sameness to it. But there's also, even seeing it coming, there's sort of a feeling of dread when it comes around the second, third, and fourth time, but it doesn't help you stop it.
In your new book, you say that the psychotic process is a destructive process.
Absolutely.
You have a line I love. You say, a fire can't burn that brightly without melting circuits.
Right.
And you use that as a way to talk about the toll this takes on your family, on your friends, on your job.
On everybody. And I honestly think I've been very lucky to have had a relatively mild course, and four breaks is not, you know, I wish the number was zero. But if you've had four, maybe it's 50-50, you're going to have a fifth. But if you've had 40, it's almost certain you're going to have a 41st. I have friends who are identical to myself, and it is a game of inches, and they did not get the breaks or the circumstances, and now they're chronically ill, all labeled schizophrenics. And these are people, some of whom have patents in, you know, ultrasound, cardio. These were smart, smart people who were initially diagnosed as bipolar, and then because they didn't get well, their diagnosis gets changed to schizophrenia.
What do you think kept you from becoming them?
I think there's a large degree of luck. And I think I had a supportive family, but so did they. And I had the wonderful, great breaks that have happened to me in the last part is I was put on lithium, and it works very well for me. And I figured out that alcohol and drugs are really destructive. And I think a lot of people with mental illness think that they can stop the voices with drinking, because initially that helps. And I think a lot of people think if they can just get the right combination of Xanax and alcohol and maybe a Percodan here and there, that they can conquer mental illness. And for myself, it was slapped up beside my head that I couldn't and shouldn't drink or do anything.
You were just talking about the toll that a psychotic breakdown has on a person's life. Mm-hmm. But even after three psychotic breakdowns, you went on to have some considerable professional successes. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about getting into medical school. Now, I think 20 schools rejected you, mm-hmm. but then one very significant school took you. This was Harvard Medical School.
Again, a circumstance, an incredible bit of luck. You know, could have been so easily otherwise.
But do you also think it largely had to do with your last name?
I think the last name works two ways. I think, you know, it's like the books. You know, I think, yeah, they'll say, oh, this is interesting, and they'll read it, but it damn well better be good.
Well, in fact, you write that one of the publishers that had rejected your book said, the book is good, but with your last name, it would have to be better.
Right.
So you would think that with the last name Vonnegut, no matter how bad what you write mm-hmm. is, it would get published. But in fact, you were held to a higher standard.
I believe I was, and I think that's good. And I have, in fact, written two books that didn't get published. And that's fine with me. And I look back now, and I was really trying to force it and stuff. But no, I promise you that the name of Vonnegut does not Eden Express was turned down 13 times. And then it was picked up because somebody wrote a short article I wrote in the Village Voice. So you do have to be stubborn. And the name Vonnegut doesn't guarantee anything.
You were in your late 20s when you were admitted to Harvard Medical School. Mm-hmm. You write that you had only recently been off heavy meds, mm-hmm. Thorazine. You had been not hospitalized for 4 years. And Harvard did take some flack for admitting you.
They did. There was letters to the alumni magazine, which roughly said, you know, with all those bright, nice young men out there, why are you dredging the bottom of the barrel and taking people like this?
But you graduated.
I did.
You went on to work at Mass General.
Right.
And there's a passage in your book that I hope you will read in which you talk about another break came, actually, mm-hmm. after med school and mm-hmm. while you were a practicing doctor. And you talked about what that was like.
Okay. So when the voices came back, it was like they'd never gone. 14 and a half years, and it was like we picked up in the middle of a conversation that had been interrupted just a few minutes earlier. Having music and art speak to you and move you to your core is a beautiful, beautiful thing. But whenever it happens, I can't help worrying that the voices and too much meaning are lurking around this bend or the next or the next. Testing, testing, testing. Mark, can you hear me? Mark, come in. Can you hear me? Yes, I can hear you. Thank God. We were afraid that we had lost you. Don't worry. Everything's going to be okay now. Could you please get someone else? I serve my time and am much too old for this crap. Can't you let me be sort of normal for a while? It was 15 years ago. I did a hell of a job standing up for righteousness, and it damn near killed me, and it took me a long time to get over. I just think you could find someone else. But you're the best, Mark.
That was your fourth psychotic break.
Yeah.
Came in 1985. And it had been 14 years since your prior three.
Right.
So you might have thought you were out of the woods.
You know, the thing, I was surprised, I was scared, but I was angry.
That the voices were back.
I was angry. I thought I had served my time and I had a deal, and I was mad at all sorts of people and places that I ended up in a psych hospital again. I was furious.
You had graduated from med school. You were a practicing physician.
Right.
This wasn't supposed to happen again.
This was not supposed to happen. Absolutely not supposed to happen.
You were hospitalized many times. In addition to the Thorazine, in addition to the drugs, you had electroconvulsive therapy,
right.
shock treatment.
Right.
What were the hospitalizations like?
In retrospect, they were good. I mean, one of my complaints now about psychiatric care is if I have a kid who's sick, I can't get him into a hospital. they have to stay in the emergency room, sometimes for a week. And when I finally do get them into the hospital has to get rid of them within 2 weeks, whether they started wondering if there's something wrong with them or not. When I was hospitalized, and hospitalizations were a lot cheaper back then, I was kept for, I think, like a month, and then 2 months, and then 3 months, you know. So I sitting around and say, well, I am in a psychiatric hospital. I got over the idea that it was a grave injustice, and I got to start considering the fact that maybe there was something wrong with me, and maybe I should start thinking, if I didn't want my life to be about this kind of stuff, of what could be done.
Well, and you've just expressed your frustrations with how the healthcare system works today,
yeah.
which is a huge theme in your book.
Mm-hmm.
After you graduated from medical school, you began practicing. What kind of medical practice did you begin doing?
General pediatrics. I love not knowing what's going to come through the door.
There's a section in your book where you talk about what, in your view, medicine had become.
This was when I was a resident. We suddenly couldn't talk to people on the phone and tell them what we thought was going on. And usually we kept them out of the hospital that way.
You think that when patients could no longer simply talk to the doctor by telephone but had to come in for an appointment, that marked the beginning of a serious decline in healthcare.
Yeah, I think so.
This is a theme you come back to over and over again in your book. You're harshly critical of the healthcare system in this country, and you seem deeply disappointed by it.
I am, because we really went into medical school as idealists, I think, to serve as sort of medics on a battlefield, to sort of help a society and not to be subservient to the business plans of corporations, be they pharmaceutical or whatever. We really, really wanted to help people.
Yet you still work in the system. How do you continue to work in a system that you feel so disappointed by and that you think is so flawed?
I try to create a bubble where my patients and I are protected. And there is something for me that I absolutely love being a doctor. I love being a pediatrician. And so I'm very stubborn about not wanting to give it up. But I do think that all those downsides are real, and that care, especially in mental health, is really nowhere near as good as it was 20 years ago.
Mark, speaking of your writing, I want you to read something else for us. This is a passage about when you came home after being hospitalized in 1985, and in it you're trying to figure out what to do next.
I looked out from a home that I somehow owned. There were two cars in the driveway. I had been to medical school and done an internship and residency. For the moment, anyhow, I had a valid license to practice medicine in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Work wasn't eager to have me back like tomorrow or the next day, but no one was saying I was done forever. I was related to the person who had done all the hard work that made the house, the cars, etc. possible, but it was a complicated relationship. I couldn't imagine what it would be like to see patients again, but guessed that maybe I could do it if that's what I was supposed to do. Maybe I just had to learn to be comfortable with being uncomfortable, with being scared out of my mind, and to let it go past like it wasn't about me.
So is that reality for people who've had multiple psychotic breakdowns, that you always fear having another one, that you never know when the next one is coming?
It certainly is for me. But you do learn that you do have some control and power, and you can take good care of yourself. But there's always the fear that all the lines you have set up can be overrun.
Do you feel that as a doctor, you need to disclose to your patients that you've had a history of psychotic illness?
Absolutely not. And what I do is I say to people, kids, this stuff runs in my family. You know, I know some about it or whatever, but I think it would scare people. And the nice thing about pediatrics is very few of my patients are going to hear this, but even if they did, they'll be all right. But I don't make a point out of saying this happened to me. I mean, certainly if I've been hiding it, I've been doing an extremely poor job. I think the wounded physician is a long and really honorable history. And I think it's true that doctors who have had to deal with chronic illnesses contribute enormously to medicine. And there is something about that that makes them better doctors.
You also have a line in your book where you say, if you're lucky enough to survive going crazy and get back to the point where you can pass for normal, it builds a question into the rest of your life. You have to forgive people for wondering, how all right can he be? And I wondered, have you really learned to forgive people, or is there always an irritation or an anger when you see people doubting or wondering, people who know your history and wonder if you're stable for sure and for good now?
No, I think you have to forgive, and that's absolute. And I think that people who feel entitled to extra credit or a pass because they've had illness of any sort, that's a form of a chip on your shoulder that's going to get you into trouble.
Mark Vonnegut, thanks for coming on Radio Boston.
My pleasure.
Mark Vonnegut is a pediatrician in Quincy. His new memoir is titled Just Like Someone Without Mental Illness, Only More So. To read an excerpt from the book, go to wbur.org/Boston. Stay with Radio Boston all this week for comprehensive coverage of the final days of the campaign season. We'll have one-on-one interviews with each of the candidates for governor of Massachusetts, and they'll be here to take your calls and comments starting tomorrow with the incumbent, Democrat Deval Patrick. That's Radio Boston all this week at 3. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.